Okay, well, folks, many of you will know Kim and Scott. I've been involved with Geneva from, actually before day one, during the, forming the whole thing and how to put it together. So rather than kind of interview you guys, I understand you're going to say a little bit about you and money and ministry and stuff, so over to you. Thanks.
Are you feeling refreshed?
Yes.
You've not spent any money for 2 days. That just doesn't happen, does it? Except for a coffee, maybe. But we do talk about money. As Al said, Scotty and I have been around the traps a bit, but we have not ever planted a church, been in charge of a church, gone to Bible college, or done any of that. So we feel alien in some way. But you guys have embraced us and we feel like we're talking to friends. So that's good. Background-wise, I've come from primary school teaching, mothering, run my own business for a while there, and are now doing relationship counselling. So not much money involved in there. Scott, picture him now. Just add locks to about here, a beard to about here, a bare chest with a guitar strap over him. It doesn't end there. A Sulu, as in dress, wrapped around his cozzies, sitting on Terrigal Beach, failed university student and beach bum, unemployed. That's what I met on Terrigal Beach 30-something years ago.
She knew when she was on a good thing, didn't she?
So to be standing here talking to you about money, we know both ends of the spectrum, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. We started out with zippo, absolute nothing except debt. We know, as Paul said, what it is to have nothing and what it is to have more than enough. Over the background, as Scott got out of his Sulu and put on a shirt and shaved his beard, he did get a job. And he built up a very successful software engineering business, which he still owns but does not run anymore. So he's backed out of that and is basically a self-funded retiree. So in those years of like 30-plus years, there's been a lot of experience. We have known what it's like to have very little, and we have known what it's like to have way more than we need. And we've found on both ends of the spectrum, same lessons. You've got to realise that what you have is entrusted to you from God, and you have to manage it wisely. And I've got to say, managing a lot wisely is harder than a little. It raises a whole bunch of extra things you've got to think about. But they're the same principles. And so we thought we'd do it a little different for our time today. We're going to tell you what we're not going to do. We're not thinking money's a dirty word. We know we have to live with it. We know that it's something that God gives us. And it does further the gospel. And that's why we feel a part of you guys. While we're not on the same page, as far as the work we've done, we're partners. And that's why it's exciting to be here with you. We do have to be entrusted, we do have to steward what we've been entrusted with. And that's what we're going to do today. But different to perhaps the other sessions, we're not going to throw any Bible verses in there. We're going to assume you guys will struggle with this issue theologically all your lives. So we're leaving the Bible out of this particular talk. So bear with us with that. We're not going to talk about church planting finances. This is a refresh. This is for your marriage. We're going to talk about the finances that you and your wife, husband, your financial life stages. Okay? So we can't answer all those church questions, except where that impacts you and perhaps your wage. And we're not going to try and cover everything. If I let Scott take over this microphone now and he wanted to tell you what's in his head, which is about this much, you'd still be here at midnight and what would we be talking about? Spreadsheets and flowcharts. Everybody would be so excited because that's his passion. He really does love it. And when he says, I love talking about this stuff, he means it. And I'm the one who has to say, hang on, hang back. You're going too fast. You're covering too much. So what we're going to try and do is throw to you guys very early up front. Rather than have 40 slides and 2 minutes of questions at the end, we're going to start reversing it, do it the other way around. So Scott's going to put out a handout face down in front of you. And you're going to, while he's doing that, turn to each other, girls first, and you're going to answer this question. When I think about our financial situation now, I feel blah. All right? Girls' turn. When I think about our financial situation now, I feel, and put in your words for that. So can you do that for now, just for a minute? All girl voices. Don't look at that page yet. Got a few guys there having a bit of a bromance, I think. No girls to talk to? Not yet. Okay, guys' turn. When I think about how we're handling our finances now, I feel. When I think about how we're handling our finances now, I feel. Okay, you've got a snapshot of how your husband or wife is feeling about now and how your finances are, how you're handling money. But there's so much we could talk about. We've decided to get you to set the agenda. So if you could turn over your sheet now, you'll find there's five areas that we can pick brains and chew the fat over. In each box is structuring, which is just how you structure your finances, bank accounts, home loans, credit card usage, anything like that. Just structure. There's tracking, about accounting for it. Who's doing what are the tasks? Finding out where the money goes. In the middle there's sourcing, where your money's going to come from. Donors, how to approach them, how that works. Separating your personal from church finances, how your wage is packaged. There's spending, working out how that works. Not budgeting, we don't like the word budget, so negative. We call it spending plan. How to do one of those.
Girls seem to like that better.
And then there's investing, as in long-term future. So you guys might be young, one day you'll be our age, believe it or not. Questions that you need to know about that far into the future. We'd like you to spend some time now talking with each other. Out of those boxes, as I said, we can't cover everything. So from you, we're going to click on one of those, whichever the top vote is. Out of those, the top three out of the five that you think you'd have more questions about right now and you'd like to just talk about those things. So if you put your initial girls above what you think and the guys put their initials above what they think, we'll try and work out what's top spots. Off you go for a little while.
And don't let your partner influence your decision. You put your initial alongside the three boxes that you think are the ones you're important about. It's important to you. So three boxes each, and they don't have to coordinate. No, they're not.
Okay. I drew on the house and I've got in trouble, but it's alright.
You're so embarrassing today. Done.
Good teacher, got your heads up, pens down, ready to roll? Scotty, you might write down how many girls and how many guys on each box first.
Oh, no, we'll just do show of hands.
Yeah, but you'll need to go through all of them. Oh, yeah. So, okay, so actual, we'll go down that way. Will we? I'll go on this one. So the first box, structuring the money. So actually how you structure home loans, bank accounts, credit cards, all that sort of stuff. Girls, hand up if you tick that one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, guys, how many put that one in? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. Tracking the money, actually accounting for it, bottom line sort of stuff. Girls. I don't know. Oh, just interested in the girl breakup. See, 1, 2, 3, they're doing that. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And boys, tracking? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Sourcing, girls? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Guys? Big one. That's it. Okay. Yep, okay. 11. Spending plans? Girls? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Good. 14. 14. And guys? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And investing, girls? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And guys, investing? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Okay. It'd be great to have for the rest of the week if you do it all. But you're the numbers guy. What are we doing? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for doing that, Kimmy. Well, that's interesting. Investing. You all want to think about the future. Terrific stuff. All right, so that's where we go first. All right, so what I want to make a point here is we do a lot of work with couples in marriage stuff in our church, and one of the things we find has always been a big hitter is for people to understand what stage of life they're in right now and what's coming up and what's coming in the future. And we find that actually can be a real source of tension in marriages, because particularly if you get to a stage of marriage and you haven't prepared for it in a whole bunch of areas, it can create a lot of stress and tension, and particularly the guys can feel they really haven't provided well for the family and really mucked it up. So I'd like you to just sort of, in your little blank page of notes there, life has many stages and it presents different financial challenges. What would be really good for you to do would be to proactively analyse the next 5 years. Now, we probably won't have time to really do this in depth now, but we will give a little bit of time for you to do it. So just write down on your piece of paper what's happening. This is under investing. This is under the investing topic. What is in place for the next 5 years? Where are we now? And where do we think we'll be in 5 years' time? Look for those differences and plan and take precaution for them. Now, what I mean by this is, let's say you're only newly married and you haven't had any children yet, but you're expecting to in the next 5 years. That's going to have a massive impact on your family, on your relationship, and particularly on your finances and your spending plan. You need to be able to ensure that you cater for that. Don't let it take you by surprise and think, gosh, we can just keep living the same way we have, and then you have the children and boom, and it's all over. So it's important for you to really understand where you are and what's coming. So do you get the drift? So now I'll just give you a couple of minutes now. I don't want you to solve the problems of the world. I want you to sort of look at where you are now, where you're going to be in 5 years, and what might be some of the bullet points you can put down that you need to think through. So quickly talk about it together if you want to, but write down your own individual plans individually. Okay, just start to sort of wind up now. So those of you who haven't actually started planting a church yet, you might want to consider that could have some impact on you in the next 5 years. Now what that means, you're all in different life stages. So what it does mean is, for goodness sake, find somebody who's 5 years down the track and say, what's coming? Is it a train? You know, like try to work out what's likely to impact you and then start to think about it. Yeah, you don't want to stick your head in the sand and then get there and find that you haven't catered for your financial affairs and some of the other emotional and even perhaps how you plan holidays. You know, if you're just a couple and you don't have children yet and sort of holidays just sort of happen spontaneously, you're going to have to think about how you do your holidays together and so on when you have children, because they don't happen spontaneously. You've actually got to plan for them. Okay? So I'll just move forward. Planning for the future. Now, investing is basically that. It's not necessarily just trying to make money for the sake of making money. It's to try to cater for the future. Now, there's different ways you can do that. Most Australians like to own their own home. Finding out lately with the way the financial crisis has affected the home markets, that's not as important these days. Quite a lot of people are now settling for rent. But then we're also finding that there's a shortage of rental. And you're lucky if you can find a place to rent now, and if you do, you're paying through the nose for it. But there is starting to develop a culture in the young people that owning a home doesn't have the same impact to them. But as my grandmother said, God's finished making land, but he hasn't finished making people. And that means that having a place to be able to put your head in, to have a roof over your head, to live somewhere, it will gain in value over time. And there is no doubt that probably all of my previous generation, like my parents' generation, that was the sole source of their investment value, what developed their wealth for their retirement was the home that they owned. And all they tried to do through life was pay it off. So you may want to think about whether you buy a home or not. Now, you actually do have some very tax-effective ways of buying homes with your ministry packages, because you can actually pay off your home pre-tax, which is pretty clever stuff. But you also need to try to make it so that the home will grow in value, so it's in a good area and all that sort of stuff. But then, that's what you say to a normal person trying to do a home as an investment. But in your church, maybe that doesn't work, because you have to be in the area where your church is. And if you're trying to reach a different demographic, then you need to really live in that area. And so you might have a problem. But that might mean that if you can pay that home off soon, you might want to then do an investment, which means maybe you go and buy an investment property somewhere that you could go on holiday at, or allow other ministers to go on holiday at, or just put it out for rental. So consider that, because those are all options that you can use to be able to put real estate as being one of your investment alternatives. Doesn't look particularly good at the moment, but what I've found over time is that the time when everybody's saying, you're mad to get into, is exactly when you should. So when property's at their lowest, everybody says, you're never going to make money out of property, but that's exactly when you should. And when everybody says, oh, this is when you really should get into property, is when property's at a boom. Because everybody goes, well, everybody's making money out of it, so let's get into it. Now is a good time to get into property, because it's very, very low. It's probably going to be low for a while, so there's no great crashing urgency, I think. But no doubt over the next 20 or 30 years, you'll find that whatever houses you were looking at today will quite possibly be, 5 to 10 times the value in the future. It's frightening stuff.
Scott, can I ask
you?
Sure. When we started, the big question that went through my mind, and we never quite, it was reasonable we could resolve the way we have, and another way that we have. Is it best to get the church to buy the house for you, and you buy a two-bedroom unit in a place that better than using a housing allowance from the church to pay for the house that you buy?
Did you get the question on that one? Is it better to have the church buy your home and then for you to use your housing allowance to pay off an investment property?
Or use the rental income possibly.
The rental income as well to do that. I would say it's better to own your own home rather than have the church own it. There's a couple of reasons. You get a capital gains tax free on the home that you reside in. So if you're actually living in your home and you sell it in the future for twice the price, but you've lived in it, it's your principal place of residence, there's no tax on it. So that's a good investment. Whereas if you're using that money to pay off an investment property, when you sell it in the future, you're going to pay tax on it. So I would be actually, and if you've got the opportunity, instead of the church paying for your house to live in, they're actually going to pay you a housing allowance that can pay off your home, then I think you're getting a double benefit there. So I would think financially, that would be the go. And then if you can possibly afford it to also have an investment property and have the rental do that, then that's another story.
Would there be any factors that would make that equation flip?
I can't think of any that would. I think that's fairly straightforward.
If your church already owns houses, kind of just going to go with the house there.
If that's the case, the church owns the house, and it's like a manse, and you have to go into it, that means that you won't get a housing allowance. Is that the way it would work? Then you're really snookered. Yeah. Then I would say, well, snookered, it's a pool term. There's not a lot of option that you can do. Then I guess you've got to try to work out with the rest of your salary packaging whether you could perhaps afford an investment property. Would that even, yeah, go on?
And so what about for the church? Is the church better off buying?
Yes, it would be. Yes, it would be. So here's where you get the contretemps. Because for the church, if they're actually, instead of paying you a housing allowance, they're buying a home and paying that off with it for you to go into, then the church gets the capital gain on the house. And then they don't have to pay you the housing allowance.
So there's the
equity. Pardon?
Builds equity for the church to borrow against the
home. That's right. So as the home builds in its value and has a capital gain, the church is capital gain exempt. So then that house could be sold, and that could be then used to buy a church building or buy a block of land. Some churches have been known to do that.
Scott, I don't know whether this can be answered now, but my issue is, how does it look to people in your church? This whole discussion about buying property. In our situation, we're in Surrey Hills. People live in really small units. We need something big because we're doing ministry in our home. It just looks way different. That's our issue. I don't know whether we can answer that now, but I mean, some of the older ministers here as well. How do you cope with other people's expectations of where you get paid and where you live and what you live in, etc.?
That's probably not part of my expertise. Any of the ministers want to buy into that one quickly? It is actually a tension. I was talking to one of the ministers recently, and they've been very, very careful and very, very good stewards of their money, and they actually have quite a bit of equity in their own home. And when I was talking to them, you know, I said, look, the logical thing for you would actually be, if I was giving you some thoughts, what I would do, I'd actually sell your house and buy a bigger house. Now, I know that sounds silly, but that means you can actually then pay off and have more equity in that home. And they just said, we just couldn't do that because it wouldn't look good in the church. I said, fair enough, understand it. But that's not the...
I think it is an issue, Toby. We have worked with student ministers in a place far west in Sydney, a lot of housing commission, and the minister ended up with a house that they bought a house on the hill, or the diocese bought a house on the hill for them with four bedrooms and a study, and it was double the size of anyone else's house, and it was a problem. And then I'm not without a sin. Kathy's family bought us a new four-wheel drive when we finished more college, just generosity. But if I had my time over again, I wouldn't have taken
Yep. So other streams of income. Now, I guess what I'm saying here is, as at some point of time in the future, you will not be able to work for money. There will, like, this sort of age group, you probably find you guys' average age will live to your 100, provided you have a good diet. You'll live to 100. The problem is, having somebody that will pay you to work is tricky. Now, in the normal commercial realm, it's very tricky to find somebody that will pay you once you're over 50. Because if they have to retrench you when you're over 50, the retrenchment pay is just crippling to a company. So there is written that it's supposed to be meant to protect older people from being retrenched, but it does the reverse because it means that older people don't get employed. Industrial relations law is so self-defeating. Now, in a church, you may not have that same problem with the industrial relations law, but there comes a point, I guess, and I don't know when it is, where you guys find that the grind of doing the sermon preparation and the delivery of sermon physically just can't do that. You may be able to do it ad hoc, you may be able to do it on an occasional basis, but to actually have it where you could be like the senior minister of a church out there doing what you're doing now and be paid at that rate for that, how long do you reckon that's going to maintain? How old will you be before they go, really should pension the old guy off? Right? Is it going to be 60? 65? 70? If it's 70, you've got another 30 years of life to live. So what are you going to live on for 30 years? Yeah. Now the reason why I think that's what ministers do now. So I think the reason why this is a problem now and why it doesn't really get a lot of airplay is that we keep thinking of the people that are on the pension. Because there's always the pension is the safety net. It's the social safety net for my parents' generation. That stops with my generation. The baby boom is coming through. The governments recognise they will not be able to afford to pay us to live because there's too many of us. And they're so top heavy, you guys with all your wages and taxes have got to support us. They can't. They can't do it. Yeah, we love you too. You know. So that's the problem. You know, there will not be a pension for my generation. So what do you reckon is going to happen for your generation? You'll be lucky to have medical. Yeah, that's probably what don't laugh. I think the Greens are actually proposing it. So other streams of income are really, really important for you guys to think about. Because you've got to, if you want to do like what I'm doing now, which is essentially unpaid full-time ministry, that's probably what's going to be in the future for you for the last third of your life. So how are you going to be unpaid? So that's my point. So how can you get other streams of income? You can do little things. You could start a little business on the side. You could have a little business running, doing something. You could invest in shares, provided you did it properly. You could have another property that you could sit out there like an investment property, which you may be able to use as a good ministry through your time in ministry, because then you can have a holiday place that you could go to and even share with other ministry people. The time where you rent properties out in holiday places is on weekends and school holidays, which is probably exactly the time as ministers you don't want to go and have holidays. So you might want to go and have holidays through the week or outside of school holidays, and that's great because it doesn't really cost you anything to allow somebody to go and stay in your rental property. It's a good ministry. But at the same time, you've got a property that will gain in price over the next 20 years. So you guys are all young enough now that you've got time on your side. If you can just grab hold of the property over the next 20 years, it'll have significant value.
Just going to ask, with that and how it relates to home ownership, would you counsel focus on one of those primarily at first until that's set up, or explore several of those ones?
What I chat to people about is it's really good. The best first investment you can get is your own home. But then the problem with my parents' generation was, and even my generation, a lot of the guys that I tend to talk to that are my peers, they say, oh look, we've done a great job and I'm now 52 and I've finally paid off my last home loan payment. We've now got our home debt free. How good is that? But I'm retiring. I've got to retire in 3 years and I need $2 million by the time I retire. What do I do? it's not going to happen. But the first step is what you now do is you go back to your bank and you take another mortgage out on your home that you've just paid off, and you invest that money and go and do something else with it, whatever it is. And they go, well, I've just got rid of my mortgage. And I go, exactly. I say, well, why didn't I do this 20 years ago? And I go, exactly. Right, because we get fixated on the idea we need to pay off our home. But the thing is that as there's a... I won't try to draw it, but if you can imagine, if this is your debt level on your home, then over time that debt level is going to drop, isn't it? Hopefully, right, as you pay it off. But at the same time, your house is going to increase in value like this. So there's this triangle here, which is what's called your equity. This is your value or wealth that you have in your home. Yeah, and by the way, the bank will lend you up to 80% of the current value of your home. So that little triangle there is a big chunk of equity that you can borrow. So when you take that equity, you can then take another loan out, go to the bank, and it's a home loan interest rates, but you can then use that for investment purposes. So that could then be borrowed against your home to do an investment. So you could do shares with it, you could go and buy another investment property and use that as your deposit, whatever it is, but you actually have your home working for you while you're paying it off.
You've still got to be able to service the repayments on that extra loan.
Absolutely. So the investment does have to be able to sustain. And there's different sorts of investments. There's commercial, there's residential, there's shares. There's a whole bunch of different investments. And you've got to make sure that the bottom line is that if you're paying 7% on your loan, that you've got to make a better return than that. That's got to be serviced. So yeah, Mikey, answer your question. You've got to get your home, because that's the pivotal point that starts to generate your equity long term quicker than you can actually pay it off, but then start using that equity as you can draw down on it. Is that clear?
When would you start using the equity?
When?
Straight away.
As soon as you've got it. Yeah. As soon as you've got an affordability, start looking at what you can do with it. Like some of the young couples that we've talked to in our young married course, I've even said, look, you know, if you want to do a little bit small business or something, or you like guitars, have a little business where you go and buy guitars off eBay and clean them up and polish them, put new strings on and so on. You know, if you know the value of something and other people don't, and you can make a quid out of it, why not?
And the only other thought about perhaps your first home not being the one that you live in, from a ministry perspective, sometimes with couples, if they're owning their own home, they'll put too much effort and time in it, and sometimes not take other ministry opportunities up. So if you own your own home, you probably have to know your own personality. Are you going to get attached to it, and will that make a difference to your choices? And if you've got an investment home, you will tend to be a little bit looser with it, and then you've got the negative gearing. So yeah. I think you've got to look at all those options and your own personality and ministry things as well.
And by the way, something to think about with your home loan, if you're ever talking to investment people, I'll probably say you should be negatively gearing, all that sort of stuff, and that basically means that you lose money on the home, on the investment opportunity. So you buy an investment property, but you lose money on it. What do I mean by that? If you're borrowing money at 7%, but the traditional residential return on investment, like the rental that you get, is probably only 3-5%. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to work out you've got a minus 4% there. So that's called a negative gearing, which usually you pay for because of the wage that you can offset that against. So if you're a normal worker on like an $80,000 wage or something like that, then you can take that loss and get it as a tax deduction for you, which means a good benefit to you, and that actually makes it work. But for you guys, where you're on a stipend where not a lot of it's taxable, negative gearing is very difficult for it to work for you guys. So you have to think of other types of investment that get a higher return than that residential. Things like commercial could be an option, but there's all sorts of other options for you. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is superannuation. We have to move along because this is taking a lot of time. Questions are good. Hope it's helpful. Superannuation. You all have it. Yep. It's all a compulsory part of your wage if you're getting paid, Andrew. So you've got a superannuation policy that's somewhere, right? And that superannuation is being paid into that account. Now, that is an investment for the future, but quite often those investment funds will be sitting in some managed fund that by definition almost loses money. They're not terribly good, I don't think, at managing their own money. Now, there are ways of being able to draw that superannuation money out and to manage it yourself with having your own self-managed super fund.
Can you ask that question? Does anyone have a self-managed?
Does anyone have a self-managed super fund? Right. We've got a couple. Self-managed super funds, they cost about $2,000 a year to set up and maintain. So there is a cost to them, so you have to make more money than that. So you need to know how much money you've actually got in your super fund. But if you work out, even if I've got 50 grand in my super fund, if I can make 10% on that where the current manager's only making zero, and it's costing me $2,000 a year, I'm actually in front, aren't I? Because even 50 grand's going to earn me five less two, I'm still $3,000 in front. But the thing is, you can then use that superannuation money as an investment money. You can use it to buy a property, to buy a commercial building, and that's all catering for your retirement, because that will be money you will be able to access when you get to retirement age. And it's the best tax-effective investment as well. Now, there's one other thing here. Who has life insurance? Good. Who pays for it from their superannuation fund? Good. Okay. Firstly, if you don't have life insurance, how comfortable do you feel that if you died, this guy's I'm talking to, that your wives would be well looked after and would have enough money? Do you want to leave them in that position? Right? Now, most of us don't want that to happen. Most of us would like to have some form of way of being able to pay off the house, or perhaps an income substitution for our wives if we die. But we probably can't afford to pay the life insurance, right? Because it costs a lot of money. But if you have a superannuation fund, and everybody does, you can get your superannuation fund to pay your life insurance. In other words, you can have life insurance today and it doesn't cost you anything out of your daily wage. You don't have to find the money for it because the super fund will pay for it. And it has exactly the same impact as if you died, your partner would still get looked after. Does that make sense? So if you're currently paying your you're currently paying your life insurance from your own bank account, stop it.
Stop it.
Right? Stop it. And in fact, if you now go to your superannuation fund and ask them, do they have life insurance out for you? They'll probably say, yes, we do. And that's what superannuation funds do, because guys like AMP, for example, they're not only an investment superannuation fund, they're also a life insurance fund. And so what they do is they take money out of the super fund for compulsory life insurance to look after your best interests. So they have this income stream coming out of your superannuation, and when you find out how much you're insured for, it's two bobs worth of nothing. Right? But it's enough to be able to suck money out of your superannuation fund. So, first thing, make sure that you know what your superannuation is and where it is, and do the numbers and work out whether you can have your own self-managed super fund. Because even if it's $2,000 a year to maintain it, you can have four members in it. So that could be you and your wife, and even, you know, some of the family members that you might have, which can amortise the cost down and put money into it, and then start playing and understanding how you work this money. Toby.
Scott, just wondering, would it really be that effective nothing,
like,
how would I make a better return than some dudes who know a lot more
than me?
And then secondly, would it consume a lot of my time?
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, maybe your partner might be able to do it. Well, at the end of the day, Toby, that's a good point, because you want to get on and do ministry and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, you've got to try to work out where your income stream is going to come from for the future. Now, can you do a better job than the other guys?
Management would it involve, or is it as simple as finding investment property, investing in that for 20 years?
Yeah, could be.
Very little ongoing management.
Yeah, could be. You could do something really simple like that. You could just go and buy some blue chip shares and sit on them. Right? If you just don't want to manage them and don't want to watch them, it's fine. But the problem is with a lot of the funds managers, have you heard about them having balanced portfolios? What they mean by that is, you know, if mining shares go up, then when they come down, bank shares usually go up, right? Because people like to invest in cash rather than business. So they find well, if you're going to have shares that are, and they're all in mining, then when mining goes down, you lose money. And then you look a deal when you go to your investors. So what they do is they do a balanced fund. So they get, they essentially, what they do is they buy stocks that are counter-cyclical. So if you've got ones that go up and ones that go down, they buy them. Now, if you know anything about compensating sine waves, if you have two, you know, things that balance out, you make no profit, right? So what they're doing is they're trying to hedge their bets by not being in a situation where they're going to stand before their funds managers and say, you know, we lost a lot of money because we made a gamble and it didn't pay off. They play the safe game and say you don't make any profit. So I think, yes, you can. That if you can sort of sit today and go, you know, I reckon over the next 10 years mining's probably going to do pretty well in Australia. Right. So then what you could do is you could go, we will actually, or energy stocks like, you know, HDF and so on that do energy, gas and electricity. What you could do with those ones, you could just say, I'm just going to buy blue chip companies and stick them in the superannuation fund, forget about them. And in 20 years see what they look like. Or review it every year or so.
If you pay your life insurance out of your super, does that mean that when
yeah, good question. Emma's just saying, if you pay for your life insurance out of your super, won't that drain your super fund? Yes, it will. But it means that you're protected. If you, you know, if you died before you got to retire, you'd be protected. So there's that gamble with it. But the point is, you guys are all so young. Well, not all of us, but a lot of us are quite so, you guys are so young. You could actually get quite a good lot of insurance cover quite cheaply. Like I'm talking, you know, $400 to $600 a year. But when you go to get your life insurance, you've got to think about, what do I want to really get? And my default thumb in the air is, you should have enough money to pay off whatever loans you've got. So let's say that's $500,000, like for ease of calc, $500,000. And we should have enough money to invest that will replace the wage I'm currently on in gross terms. And so let's say, for one of the, that you're getting, you know, $60,000 a year. So you say, I need the wage to replace $60,000. So let's say conservative interest rate in a bank is 6%. That means I need $1 million invested at 6% to make $60,000 a year. So I'm going to need $1.5 million in life insurance. Simple. Now the difference between $1 million and $1.5 million is $50 a year or something at your age. Right? So it's, and you think $1.5 million, whoa, I'll kill him off. You know, as much as I love him and your car would be nice. Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. So life insurance, make sure that you cater for the future well.
Scott, just a quick question on super companies. Mm-hmm. A lot of churches use Christian super companies.
Mm-hmm.
They're ethical and there's good reasons. What do you think? Before we come out, whether it's a smart or do we make more money going elsewhere?
I think you make more money if you take in attention about it yourself and you think about it yourself. But if you can't, then yeah, go for one of the Christian super companies and but have a look at their returns and what their fees are, all that sort of stuff. Yes?
If I'm a self-managed super fund, how does life
insurance? Same thing. So I've got a self-managed super fund and when it's set up, I have a bank account and any of my super goes into the bank account, I can trade shares from that bank account, I can buy property with that. Kim and I are just doing a development at the moment, we bought a property, we're going to develop it, all through that bank account. And then when the life insurance comes in, I just pay it out of that bank account. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Move on. We're running out of time. Probably only got time for one more of these. It's fun stuff. Now, according to the numbers here, spending was a big one. Want to do spending? The girls are pretty keen on the spending one. Have a spending plan. Break the income equals expenses cycle. Let me tell you a quick story. When Kim and I first got married, I was getting paid once a month. Kim got paid fortnightly. And so what we decided to do was we put Kim's wage in the bank every time it came because she's a teacher when fortnightly. When I got paid, we sort of worked out, I wonder how much it costs us to actually live a month. Because we didn't really know. So I got one of those column books. It was sort of like an old school spreadsheet. Right? It was one of those drawn line books. I put columns up there that were sort of, church, rent, car, petrol, right through groceries, entertainment, and even just spending, discretionary spending, ahead of the column. And then we put figures in it, and then when I got paid, we drew the cash out, and I got envelopes, and we wrote on the envelope how much we put in it, and we slotted all the money in the envelopes, and we put it in the bedside drawer. And that's what we had to live on for the month. And that's where we got this expression came out, which was, why is there so much month left at the end of the money? And that used to be our little cry. So after the first month, we crashed and burned and went, we didn't really get that right, did we? So where did we blow out? And so we, changed the figures. And after about 3 months, we pretty well got it nailed. It was pretty good. And it made us, every time we take, $10 out of the spending one, we treat it very precious and put it in the wallet and don't spend it, And all that. So it was a bit of a game, right? It was a bit of a game and it was a bit of fun. But, it was fantastic. Without even knowing about it, it broke our connection between what we earn and what we spend. Because we actually had a spending plan that we adhered to. And I've still got those original books that I did back in 1979 of what our budget was. And I can see each month that spending plan was pretty well the same. And slowly it started to change in this area as we saw we're getting too tight. But over the next year or two, my wage went up. Kim's wage went up. And we had a great time for about 4 years there before we had kids. Remember those times? So, as I say to my kids, you don't know what true happiness is until you have kids. But then it's too late. So and I go, oh, Dad. So what we did was we had that spending plan that we adhered to for years. And it increased because cost of living does increase, but our wages went up dramatically in that time. And what ended up was cash in the bank. We had savings without even thinking about it. That's something that we have done our whole life now. Now, certainly, our standard of living is a lot higher than it was then, and we live quite nicely. But we don't have any link now between what we earn and what we spend. We spend what we believe we should be spending. And then as you have a change in lifestyle, you've actually got to sit and think about it. If we want to have that expensive whatever it is, let's mull over it and chew it over and let's, before God, see whether that's good stewardship. My experience is, from the 100 couples we've had through our marriage course, almost nobody does this thinking. And we just stumbled across it accidentally. So I would encourage you guys, work out a spending plan and then make sure that that's de-linked from your income, provided, of course, you've got some income to pay for the spending plan. But try to de-link it, decouple it completely.
Dan. I was going to say, what if you do your spending plan and then you look at your income and your income doesn't quite match your spending plan?
Yeah. Well, that's when you go out and do tent making. Okay, so the other thing is, as I said, control your standard of living. But also, allow some discretionary spending. Some of the things that we've found in our couples' time in our marriage seminar is the girls get really stressed, particularly if it's the guys who are doing the bookwork or tracking the expenses or bringing it down pretty tough. And the girls feel really guilty about how much they spend or what they spend things on. And ditto the other way, if the girls are the ones who are doing the numbers, the guys feel really guilty, oh, I shouldn't be spending this. Please allow some discretionary spending for each of you to be able to just go and buy that cup of coffee or whatever it is so that there's no, I guess you could say, abuse or potential financial abuse in that part of the relationship. So just allow a little bit of discretionary spending. But also understand, guys, that your girls are beautiful and it costs a lot to keep them that way. You have really no idea probably how much it costs for a haircut and all the stuff that they do when they go to the hairdressers. And you've probably got no idea how much it really costs for shoes because thongs don't cost that much. So you really do need to understand that girls do have a lot that they have to spend on making themselves who they are that makes them attractive to us. But also boys and toys. We have our toys. We have our surfboards. We have our skateboards. We have all this sort of stuff. And you also need to control that as well. But the girls need to understand sometimes this is what you really enjoy. And so you've got to think it through. So I'm not saying go overboard and allow each of you to do whatever you like, but at least make sure that within a budget that you think it through, and any of those big decisions that you think about it yourself. The point I make it that there's a discretionary spending and understanding it does cost to keep these girls in the manner to which they're accustomed is that you need to make sure that there's no hidden expenses.
Unfortunately, I think this is a big, you know, the reason we talk about money is it's very stressful on a marriage if you're not on the same page. If you don't feel you can be open and honest with what things really cost. And I know girls who hide what they spend. And there's ways to do it. You probably know them. But it's a way of just creating a wedge between you. And so what we mean by hidden spending is we have found that if you can be trusted with a credit card, and I know it's on another slide, but if you can be trusted with a credit card, use it over and over and over and over again. It tracks everything so well. You can talk about it. You can look at it. But girls, I know that some, and if not you in your congregation, will put half the shoes on the credit card and half on the cash. Or we'll buy something a bit more expensive out of the grocery money and put it somewhere else. You end up in this cycle of deception, of just trying to handle it. And it comes from the fact that you can't be honest with each other. And I think it just spirals out of control when that wedge comes between you. I'm actually hiding money from you. I'm sticking it in a jar, or I'm under the bed, or I'm just not being honest with what things really cost. I know when I go to the hairdressers, I go, how can it cost that much? And it's a temptation to not be honest about it, but it'll get you nowhere. So if, you know, if that's a problem, you really do need to talk about in your spending plan. You can cut back to having, you know, stretching the time out between hairdressing appointments, or working out how many pairs of shoes the kids really do need and how we can borrow them from other people and work out really creative ways. Because I understand in this group, we're talking probably at a level where you're going, I don't have to think about any of that. Because there's no money to invest. There's no money to spend. But they're the same principles. You need to be on the same page and talking about it. Okay? And I think it would be good to talk about these things together.
We will. Okay? So, know what you spend. Now, the other part, is, as well as that hidden expenditure, is minimise your ATM withdrawals. Now, why do I say that? Because if you minimise, if you take money out of your ATM, you've got no idea what you spent it on. And the beautiful part about where we are at the day is, you guys have all got internet banking. Yep, hands up. Yeah, you got it. Do you know that you can download your transaction data? Yes. So I'm going, what? So what you can do is you can download all of your accounts from your bank, all the transactions, and the transactions will have, you know, date, amount, and description. Yep. What you can then do, you can go through the whole of the last year, you can suck it all down in like 10 minutes and then dump it into a wonderful spreadsheet, and aren't they brilliant? And then you can do stuff with that that will tell you exactly what you spent last year over 12 months. Brilliant stuff. How many of you know what you spent last year? Exactly. Right? Very few people do, because we don't take the time to do it. And I believe if you want to start building some equity, making some savings and being a good steward of what you've got, it starts by understanding what you've spent. Because the first thing that I find when I look at what I've spent, I go, crikey, look how much we spent on takeaway. We could cut that back and live healthier as well. So why don't we really concentrate now on trying to do more with like home cooking or something like this, or, you know what I mean? So really, when you start seeing what you really spend, it frightens the life out of you and makes you go, whoa, we could be a better steward of that. So I'm encouraging you, go and find out how much you spent last year.
System, it's all electronic.
so we can both enter in what we're spending, put it under a category. The software syncs to our computer and tells us, you know, how we're doing with our budget. And you don't have to know anything about Excel.
Cool. Well, you can talk to Elliot for that stuff. But what I've done here, just to show you what it looks like, and I'm not going to go through this line by line, but this is an example of a banking transaction sheet where you can look at an account, and then there's a little thing up here that says export data. You click on that, and it says what do you want to save it as, and you take all the defaults, saves a spreadsheet, and Bob's your uncle, up comes a spreadsheet showing you exactly which is your date, amount, transaction, and this. You then do a sort. Like, even if you're not good at Excel, if you've got somebody in your congregation who did know Excel, they could step you through this, you could take notes, and you could do it again. Then you can sort them by description. And see what happens then? You've then got all your 7-Elevens there, and all your Aldis, and your Coles, and then you can easily go down and say, oh, 7-Eleven, that's petrol, and you can do groceries, and then you can copy them down, because very quickly then, because the descriptions repeat, because we tend to buy things from the same place, then you just sort them the other way, and then you can come up with some sort of a layout like this that can then show you across each month and each category exactly what you've spent. So, it is that simple. It's like four steps to do it. I've got something like about 40 bank accounts, and I'm running about 16 sets of books at home with all the investments that I've got. I can do my whole month's accounts in 2.5 hours. And that's right to P&L and balance sheet for an accountant. Piece of cake.
That's because you're a whiz.
Yeah, it might be because I'm a whiz, but I couldn't do it before we were able to have this transaction download. So it is easy to do it. The other part, on the last part of the spending the money, is jointly decide on what to spend, what sacrifices need to be made. Now, as you sit there looking at what you have actually spent, then you need to go, gosh, we're spending a lot of money on kids' fees. You know? And you look at, you know, you're paying for music lessons and sports lessons and, you know, surfing lessons and all that sort of stuff, and you go, well, one solution would be to cut that out.
Sell the kids.
And then what you do is you sit down and you discuss it, and then you go, how highly do we value that, though? And then you might decide, that's a high-value thing. We want them to have that, and so we will make that sacrifice because we value that. Yeah? So even though there might be something, there might be holidays, you might go, whoa, that's a lot of money to spend on holidays, but we value that. Now, of course, you can't value everything, or you'll never make any savings. And as I say, allow some discretionary spending. Now, right now, we're really running short, so I'd like you now to just stop, reflect upon what we've just talked about here on the spending side, and come up with some thoughts or action points. So just by yourself, just think about what's going through your mind, what do you think you probably should talk together about, and jot them down. You've got about a minute and a half, go. Serve it up, girls.
Thank you.
Can I just have your attention now? While you're in the discussion and writing down actions point, let me go back to the investing money one. Do you remember the things that we talked about here? Because I want you to just have a quick browse through those and then also write down some actions and thoughts from those ones for you. That's what we talked about, the different stages. You had a bit of a discussion about that. But then in planning for the future and other investments, what do you think you should take away as an action point from that? You've got another minute and a half. Go. Okay. Now, we're not going to get a chance to do anything else because time is up. So just know that there's plenty more stuff to learn about money and finances out there that's pretty good to know and have in your quiver. So before we finish, any questions you want to throw from the floor, we've got about 5 minutes if you wanted to talk questions. Probably needs to be talked about, unfortunately, yeah.
Scott?
Sorry. Yes, Andrew.
Would you put on an afternoon or a day that people want to come and hang out as a lead version? You could, people want to come and just go through more material?
Sure. So, so if there's an interest in doing something like this and do more of a brainstorm question-answer with even your own individual thoughts and problems, sure, just... send us an email, send Andrew an email. I'm always happy to talk. My life now is basically stewarding the knowledge that I've been given over all these years from what I've done. You know, finance is a part of it, so I'm happy to chat. Yes, Andrew?
Absolutely. I think no also charge. The structuring the money one, it's a shame because that is so important for saving money, like where you're actually putting it in what bank accounts and offset against your home loan and stuff like that. That's like a really important one. So there is a lot... we couldn't get through.
In Hobart.
Well, look, I mean, the reality is it's not easy for everyone to get to a place.
So Hobart's a nice place.
I think you pitch to Scott. If you want Scott to do some of this stuff with you and
yep.
Pitch to him.
Yeah. So I could always... it doesn't have to be done at EV. If there was enough of a group of people in a certain area like Adelaide or something... I'd be happy to come and chat if that worked.
Do you do the personal financial advising thing, or are you talking more to these seminars?
I don't do personal. I don't do any sort of advising at all. I'm not a financial advisor. I couldn't afford the insurance for PI for that. What I do is I just share the walk. You know, this is just a part of what I've learnt. So I've like in the investment strategy when I ran my own company. I believed I needed to be a good steward of what I had. And so I only drew a wage from my company, not a profit. And so the wage I got, I invested back in. And then that... So I played all the stuff that we've just talked about. And over time, that's helped. And I've done different strategies, and we've done subdivisions and property development and shares, and we've done all sorts of weird, made some good decisions and made some bad decisions. So all I'm doing is just sharing the walk. This really had nothing to do with my business experience.
Scott, would you recommend getting financial advice from someone who does pay lots of liability insurance? And how do we choose one?
Yeah, that's a really tricky one. I'm really not a great advocate of financial advisors. Why not? Many of them, well, they work for a living, and they'll either charge you $2,500 to $3,000 to set up a plan for you, and or they'll then be incented to get you to invest in things that they make money out of. And also, by definition, a lot of these financial advisors are working from your surplus funds, right? Because they want you to invest in these shares or in that fund or whatever. So they want you to invest cash. What they don't tend to do is to look at you as a person and say, with your job, with your environment, how is the best way for you to build a nest egg for the future? They don't sort of look at your tax system, and they sort of have a little plan they roll out, and particularly for church people it doesn't quite fit because of your salary packaging. Mm. Emma?
Do you recommend we keep doing our own tax? Like, is it best to get people to do your tax?
I always get somebody to do my tax, yeah. But I prepare right through to P&L and balance sheet, so I do the whole ball game, so they don't have to do very much. So my tax bill for the year is probably only about $3,000, I think, and that's for 15 different entities. That's because I do all the work, and they just submit it. But I get them to audit it and check it for me. So, but those of you who don't get involved, we didn't get to the tracking the money, but actually accounting for what you spend. If you don't actually take the responsibility of keeping your books, keeping your receipts, doing, you really do need to stand up to it. It's sort of like saying, I don't like cooking, so let's not eat. Money is a big part of life, and it's a big responsibility that you've been given. And if you don't steward it properly, then can you not be surprised that you won't have a lot left? It's not that you want to be money greedy, but you need to be a good steward of it. And so I think that means understanding where it's gone, what it's done for, accounting for it, and so forth. Andrew.
Yeah, Scott, can I... I haven't talked to Ellie Goss about this, but Scott does a lot of helpful stuff with church finances as well. And as you're starting a new church, getting some of that, this whole financial management yourself in your own personal life and in the church is... fundamental foundation. You'll be in all kinds of mess if you don't get it set up properly at the beginning. And I'm going to offer Scott for that as well. I'm actually just throw to you. Would you be interested in talking to people about that side of things?
Yeah, sure. Look, I got to say, standing up in front of people talking to people freaks me out. I'm not used to it. I've only just started doing it this year. What I mostly normally do is just mentor with people or share the walk or sit and just chat and work through individual circumstances. But I'm learning, I'm being stretched, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, look, I'm happy to help. So understand, I'm now self-managed retiree, minister, whatever you want to call it. I'm now just stewarding my skills where there's a need for it. So I'm happy, if you want to get my card, send me an email, see what we can sort out, happy to do that.
And I take care of the diary.
Yeah. Kim's the one who actually books things in.
I just, sorry. Yeah. I'll let you
start. Very, very good question. You talked a lot about buying a house. In your experience, a lot of us might be tempted to buy something cheap and renovate versus buying something that's already done. What would you say in terms of
investment? Renovating is probably better as an investment if you've got the time to do it. And, as ministers, you've got plenty of time on your hands. And and renovating a house isn't much of a disruption, is it, Andrew? who's lived in chaos for the last 6 months? It's that. If you can get the worst house in the best street and you can do it up, you'll make a lot more capital gain out of it. But it's going to take a lot of time to do that.
Especially because you've got no money, so you do it. Well,
you do it on a cost-plus basis, and then you find out that you really are responsible for project managing it on the fly, or else you end up paying through the nose. Kate?
Yeah,
Kathy?
Can I just make a comment? I just urge you all, even if you're not tended to like it much, because one of you won't in your partnership generally, is that to track your money and to work out what you're spending the cash on and write it all down over a couple of months or whatever. And because even if you want to go see a financial advisor or have someone help you out with it, you need to know basically what you're spending.
Mm.
And when you track your money better, you can give it away better.
Totally right, and I guess wanted to end with giving a bit of hope. I feel that with that sort of level, everyone's going, you know, I got no money to spend, I got no money to invest, what's it all about? But we have found that we've worked with couples in bankruptcy. We've worked with really messy couples in their 50s who don't have a clue what's going on, have no idea where anything is. We've worked with people who've just lost it all through tragedy. Husband's died, wife's left with nothing, no insurance, nothing. That we've worked with lots of people in different situations, and under God, there's always a way through. Might be hard and difficult, but you've always got something. You are living, you are eating. There's a way to cut costs, save money, structure yourself right, track it, and put it behind you so it's not your focus. The trouble is we think that people with money are always focused on money. It's the opposite. It's when you're not organised and you're not handling it right. That's when it takes your focus away from ministry. You're under so much stress. So just handling it right will free you up and God will be able to use you so much better.
Okay. I get in trouble for waking people up at home all the time, but hey, it's out of the house. Outdoor boys here. Excellent. Thank you.